talking today with Roger Johnson, president of the National Farmers Union. And Roger, a lot of things going on right now that's got impact on rural American agriculture. And maybe, you know, top of mind for a lot of folks right now, we're still seeing USDA implement the Farm Bill. We're in the process of signing up for the make those decisions in anticipation of signing up for the commodity title, the safety net. How do you think, you know, what's your feel on how USDA has done since Mr. Obama signed it into law?
You know, pretty much everybody thinks they've done a pretty good job, that this is both sides of the aisle, lots of compliments to USDA for rolling out what is clearly, or maybe unclearly, the most complicated farm bill we've ever had. I would give them a lot of kudos for that, or give them a lot of kudos for that. And I think most people in Congress feel that way as well. I think the message to farmers right now is if they haven't signed up, they ought to get in there and do it sooner rather than later. You know, there's two big decisions that need to be made, whether they're going to update their base and yield and, you know, rearrange that. That's end of this month. And that needs to be, in most cases, that's a no-brainer. Just go in, make that decision, be done with it. And at the same time that you're there, you might just as well decide that you're going to either sign up for PLC or ARC. And you know, people should just be aware that Chairman Lucas is the one who wrote the PLC provisions. My guess is, knowing what I know about how this farm bill works, that's going to work pretty well for most folks in Oklahoma. Now, there may be a few places where ARC might do a little better, but it's really a question of, do you want to gamble on this thing, or do you want to just sort of have the protection if, in case the market goes in the toilet and stays there for a long time? And basically, the way I look at this thing is, if you think the market's going to go down and stay down for a long time, PLC is the obvious choice. If you think the market's going to be bouncing all over the place, go up and then go down the next year and then up again the next year, you're going to be able to make some money off of that fluctuating market with ARC. I don't know. My money is, you know, the simple choice is PLC. It's the safe choice. But clearly it's going to depend. Different farmers are going to make different decisions on this because their circumstances are different. It depends on what their yields are, what their base acres are, and all those kinds of things. Right. So advice is just get in, make the decision. Even if you change your mind, by the end of March, you can go in and still change your mind. Mm-hmm. And it's a simple process to change your mind. It's probably a more complicated process to get the sign up done first. So, folks ought to just go in and do it now rather than wait. Okay. Long lines, you know, farmers standing in long lines at end of March, that's probably not the best use of our time.
One of the things that I think we've already heard the rumblings about, and we're sure to see this play out over probably the next couple of years as we go through appropriations each year, folks taking dead aim at that pot of money that's connected to crop insurance. Yeah. Are you concerned about that?
Well, there's a lot of talk about it right now. I think the ag community is pretty unified around supporting crop insurance. And I think the compelling argument is, listen, it took us 3 years to get this farm bill done. Part of that farm bill was all the decisions that were made on crop insurance. We'd have probably done some of them differently, just like everybody else would have. Part of that decision was what we did with the nutrition programs, with food stamps. Right. They're put in the bill. They're in the law. Let's just leave them alone. And I think, you know, if Congress has been good at doing anything the last few years, it's doing nothing. So my hope is that they will just sort of leave this thing alone. And let it play out, and let's see what happens. We don't need to be, you know, the agriculture chunk of the total budget is under 2% of the grand total. And the part that goes back to farmers in it is almost an infinitesimal part of 1%. So, you know, we ought to just quit. I think agriculture was probably the most responsible sector of everyone in the federal budget when it came to putting this deal together. We took significant cuts when the Farm Bill was passed. There's a lot of voices now that are saying, you know what, that's done. What's done is done. We ought to leave it alone. And I kind of think, Ron, that that's going to prevail.
One of the things that Congress left alone as they went through the 14 Farm Bill process, even down to the conference committee, was country of origin labeling. Basically, the thing was, let's see what happens. We're still waiting, of course, obviously, for a final decision. We've made the final appeal. I know that you've got some pretty strong opinions about what should come out of that and how we should respond.
Yeah, we do. Farmers Union has always been a strong supporter of country of origin labeling. 90% plus of the consumers in this country want to know more about our food. For crying out loud, most farmers and ranchers are proud of what they do. They want to tell them more about their food, so let's tell them. And that's pretty fundamental stuff. Now, you're right. Congress did leave COOL alone. I think it was the right decision for them to leave it alone. Just last week, in fact, we finally won the last legal challenge against this. We intervened on the side of USDA in support of COOL against the Packers and Canada and Mexico. Won four decisions. Their last option was to appeal the Supreme Court, and they opted not to. And that was the right choice because they lost every single decision on every major issue legally. So the law is legal. It's constitutional. The question now is what's WTO going to do it? And, if you look at the history of the three WTO rulings, every ruling has narrowed the decision of the previous ruling for three times now. So we had we're out of compliance, made an adjustment on appeal. On appeal, they found that adjustment was better than what it was before. And I rather expect that this next one will either it'll be overturned or it'll significantly narrow it again. And then we'll see what happens. Now, that next step, this is assuming this is final, which, there's a lot of debate about whether that's final because WTO never really does seem to make anything final. Then the next step would presumably be retaliation. Retaliation, the Canadians have to prove that they suffered economic damage. There was just a big study out of Auburn University, Dr. Taylor, who looked at in detail publicly reported pricing information by all the packers going back for the last 10 years, before COOL, after COOL, concluded there was zero impact on the Canadian cattle industry. And, that study's going to have some weight at the WTO, too. I mean, the Canadians are, they're running around saying we lost $1 billion. Well, you know what? Everybody lost billions of dollars when the economy cratered. That's what happened. I mean, the economy crashed, and everybody lost a bunch of money. And, the Canadians like to blame that on COOL. Well, it's a big stretch, and I think that study demonstrates it's a big stretch. So the next step of the WTO, even if they don't overturn, if they find against us, the next step is saying, okay, what were the damages? If the damages are zero, it's zero. It's over.
But Secretary Vilsack, just the other day before the House Ag Committee, indicated that it's a segregation. In other words, that's where the problem is. And he seemed to express the opinion, I've heard this before from him, that until we fix the segregation issue, we're going to be out of compliance with WTO.
The question is whether that segregation issue cost the Canadians any money. So the WTO decision said, yes, segregation is the issue. But then the question becomes, does that result in damage? And the Taylor study says no, it doesn't result in damage. So, there's going to be a lot of debate about whether the Taylor study is in fact legitimate, whether the earlier study that the Canadians did. By the way, that study that was done by the Canadians used proprietary Canadian pricing information that is not publicly available. Owned by the CCA, the Canadian Cattlemen's Association, which is a party to the lawsuit. at minimum, it's suspect data. And then when you look at the publicly reported data, mm-hmm. it doesn't come to the same conclusion. So, you know, I think we've still got a very, very strong argument. I think Americans still overwhelmingly support this law. And I think we ought to do everything we can to defend it. And we will continue to argue for it.
Do you? I know that there's studies out there, and I know that you've alluded to the fact that consumers want that information. But you know, a gentleman up at K-State, Glenn Tonsers, done some work that says they don't really care. They as far as when they're buying, and when you look at how small the font is on that labeling information, it makes some sense that they really they got to want it pretty bad to be able to even discover it.
You want to know when that opinion changes? You have a big food safety scare, and suddenly everyone is looking at labels. Okay. And that's one of the big reasons for having country of origin labeling. You just imagine what would happen in this country if we had infant formula contaminated with melanin deliberately, like they did in China. And suddenly you had every mother in China refusing to buy any Chinese infant formula. They'd buy anything from anywhere else in the world because they didn't trust their own. It's those, and that's one of 1,000 examples, Ron. We know them all over the place, whether right. it's tomatoes or peppers or it's E. coli or it's you name it. Anytime you have a food safety scare, immediately consumers want to know where that product comes from. And frankly, it helps the rest of us. It helps government figure out, okay, if we know this has this label and that has one label A here and label B here, and we know the source of the problem is in B, well, you know, the other stuff's okay.
Right.
And so, I mean, this isn't just a, well, it's consumers might like to know, but they don't really care. You know, we don't all care about every issue every day or every minute of every day ourselves, right. you know, but they're still important.
You know? Now, speaking of that, we just had word that there's another case of BSE, a cow up in Canada. So, I mean, we've still got some stuff out there kind of lurking around that could do damage to, if not to consumers, but at least to our animal agriculture.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, and again, I mean, listen, this, I'm not going to get into the fear-mongering over BSE. I think we've been through that history enough.
Right.
But frankly, if consumers want to differentiate because of that very question, today they can at the grocery store.
Nutrition standards, the guidelines that are being talked about. We're hearing indications are that you've got some scientists that have made a recommendation that will go back to the HHS and to Secretary Vilsack that red meat should not be a part of a healthy diet. Is that a worry?
I don't think so. I mean, we had this, as I remember, this same debate happened the last time they did these standards, where there was this debate about, well, should meat be part of a diet? You always have some people out there who are, you know, the vegetarian, the vegan community that, you know, and there's some science that somebody can point to that says, you know, eat this and not that. There's always something like that going on. I think what I heard from the secretary the other day when he was in front of the Ag Committee was, relax. At the end of the day, I'll have the ultimate decision, and there's probably not going to be much change. And that's my guess as to what will happen. I mean, there's a lot of good reasons to eat beef. You know, there's a lot of iron in that stuff, and there's a lot of protein in it. And so, you know, I think the standard line on all things nutrition is eat a little bit of almost anything, just don't eat too much of everything.
Right. Well, last area, and that has to do with the beef checkoff. Your organization decided to pull out of the beef checkoff working group at the end of 2014. They have pushed on. There's that MOU. I know you've probably seen the language there. It's now being looked at by these various groups that are left. I guess there's a total of 8 of them. Do you feel okay about, you know, walking out of the process and staying out of that, the whole process now?
Yes. Very comfortable with it. We spent 3 years sitting at a table going around in circles. And the issue, there were two issues in front of us. Are we going to change the politics around the checkoff? And are we going to change the amount of the checkoff? And most of us said, before we're going to change the dollar, we want to make sure the governance is right. Every other checkoff in the country has separated the political arm, the policy advocating arm, from the checkoff for very good reason. The checkoff should not be politicized. It should be clear of any political influence. And beef is the only organization, the only commodity that's refused to do that. Now, this MOU that they've put together was the same MOU largely that they had when we said, you know, we've had enough of this. We talked for 3 years, and all they're doing is they're putting this chair over there and moving that chair over here. And at the end of the day, what's the change? NCBA still controls all the money in the checkoff. There's no change. And NCBA is a political organization. And NCBA has opposed a lot of the policy positions that this organization and others in agriculture have supported. And whether you agree or disagree with that, their position is not the, that's not the point. The point is they shouldn't even be in that arena if they're in control of the checkoff. That's the point. I mean, they actually lobbied against passage of the Farm Bill. And for them to be associated with the checkoff and to be lobbying, they want to lobby against Farm Bill, fine. Lobby against Farm Bill, but keep away from the checkoff. And that, so that separation has to be there, clear and distinct, or I think we're always going to have an issue with this.
So if the Federation, in other words, obviously that's where the closest, in other words, there's a claim that has been at this point upheld by USDA that there's a firewall there. Primarily, it's the Federation that handles any checkoff dollars as far as actually handling before they're allocated. The NCBA as an organization is a contractor. I mean, so what? I mean,
yeah,
what you know? Could you separate the Federation, and would that meet the NFU concerns, or how do you do that?
You just take the checkoff and the policy organization and you make them two different organizations. Every other commodity group has done that. Pork was the last one. They actually had to get sued in order for that to happen. Most people in the industry say the right thing to do. Take the politics out of the checkoff. It shouldn't be in the checkoff, period. End of story.
So would that eliminate NCBA as an organization from being a contractor then?
Well, it probably, yeah, it should. I mean, just like we shouldn't be. But the more fundamental question here is that if NCBA wants to be a contractor, that's kind of one thing. But for them to be the same organization that decides that they get to be the contractor, that's where the real rub is. I mean, NCB, they basically decide who every contractor is, where every dollar is spent, because they control the checkoff. And so they'll say, well, we have this firewall, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, true, they have a firewall. But they are still the organization that controls the checkoff dollars and goes out there and lobbies. And the two should not be together, period.